So far, so good. And not so good. What happened? Hello, Coach.
Hey.
Hey, Coach. It's Rick Moore, MSO News Sports, along with Tim Kearns. How are you?
Hey, good. How's it going?
Hold on here, Ryan. I'm going to bring Tim back in. We got some trouble with our stuff here tonight, so we're flying by the seat of our pants. Let me bring Tim back in here. Coach, Tim, you there? Tim?
Yeah.
All right, all right. We're live. I've got a monitor here. Ryan Marks is with us. And, Ryan, first of all, welcome to MSO. Now, you are the coach, manager. How does that work out for the Manchester Mariners?
Well, thanks for having me. I'm the player coach.
Okay.
Well, you know, I run the team, but I have a lot of help with a couple other guys. And, you know, together we set the lineups, and I get in there when I can, and that's how it kind of goes.
Well, ordinarily, I would have called you before and get some background on this. So we're gonna do this here, you know, as I said, by the seat of our pants. Ryan, let me think here now. Tell us a little bit about your background, where you played ball, where you went to school and so on, and how you ended up with this particular lineup, this particular job, I should say.
I played at Gloucester High a couple of years. Coach Kearns was the varsity coach while I was on the lower levels, and then I moved on to Worcester Polytech, played baseball there for 4 years. And then in the summer, I played for Manchester Essex Mariners in the Intertown League, and then I've been on that team since 2006, and then just over the years, you know, Brian Lafata used to run the team, and then, you know, as time went on, he stepped down, and then I took it over, you know, with the help of Rory Gentile and Mike Kane and a couple other older guys.
When you say older guys, I'm just laughing, right, Tim?
Yeah. I know all those guys really well.
Hey, so, Ryan, are you related to Brad or Bard Marks?
No, I'm not. I've gotten that question quite a bit, but
okay, because I played ball with those guys. All right, well, you know, great pedigree, and although you're one of the quote older guys in the league, I guess you're still a kid here. But tell us a little bit about your experience with the Mariners, and especially this year with the lineup you have, and how things are going.
Cut out on me.
Oh, I'm sorry. You got us now?
Yeah, I got you now.
Okay. So what I want you to do is explain a little bit about your experience with the team, particularly this year, and how things are going. Because, you know, it didn't look like we were going to get a game in at all here back a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, well, we're very fortunate that, you know, we're allowed to play now. You know, it was tough spring. No one's playing. Usually, either our college players are, you know, getting their hacks in during the spring and they're ready to go, or you know, us guys who.
Oh, this is fun. We just lost you. We just lost Ryan now because of I don't know what, bugs in the air here. Oh my goodness, Tim, you still there? Tim,
you can't lose me, Rick.
I've tried. God knows I've tried. Hold on, let me bring him back.
All right,
let me try to bring him back in here. Oh, my goodness. All right, Ryan, you back? Oh, my goodness. Hello? Ryan, you back?
Yeah, I'm back.
All right, there we go. Hold on, I got to bring Tim back. Hold on 1 second, I'm going to put you on hold. Tim, you there? Hello, Tim. Oh,
yeah.
Okay, there we go. Everybody's back. All right. So Ryan is back and Tim is back. So let me restart this thing. Ryan, this year you mentioned, you know, it didn't look like we're going to have a season at all. So how'd you put this thing together? And then we'll get to maybe your lineup, the guys you have. Did I lose him again?
Yep.
Oh, man. All right. You know what I'll do is I'll see if we can get a landline to Ryan. Well, we gave it a shot. Things are working okay on this end, thank goodness. I'm going to put Tim on hold one more second here and see if I can bring back Ryan. Ryan, you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Oh, you are there. All right. Tim, you there? He's not. All right, hold on one more second here. All right. Tim, are you back? Oh, my God. All right. Ryan, let's finish this up, then I'll get Coach back on here. Restart. Tell me a little bit about this year, how it's gone, how you guys got things together, and maybe some of the players you have. So, Ryan, maybe you can tell me a little bit about the team eventually. Here, we'll get to this.
Yeah.
Okay, we got you. All right, good. All right, thank you. Okay, you know, when did you guys first figure out that you were going to have a team, and then how did you put it together?
The league was always talking behind the scenes, and then just waiting for, I think, sometime in May, they posted the... you know, the phases, and we saw that phase three, they'd let baseball happen, games. So phase two, we could start practice. So I think middle of June, we started having the batting practices once a week. And then as soon as we found out that phase three was going to start, the league started scheduling games. And, you know, we started up right after the 4th of July. Short season, though, only 10 games. So it's kind of, you know, it's kind of like spring training / competitive right now. So, you know, a little hard, but good to be back out there.
Absolutely. A couple of kids I noticed on your roster, Colin Rogers, and I'm calling him a kid, said, did I see Adam Philpott's name there too?
Yeah. Yeah, both those guys have been on the team for almost a decade probably. You know, they're getting up there, but they're right in their prime, both having good years. We rely on both of them quite a bit. Colin plays shortstop for us, and Adam has been playing mostly left field, and he's right in the middle of the order. Colin's leading off, and, yeah, both having good years.
And did I see Rusty Tucker is still around?
Yeah, Rusty comes when he can. He's got a tough summer schedule running Legends, the AAU program.
Uh-huh.
He's made his way down there, pitched a couple times, and it's always awesome when he can show up.
Well, I enjoyed having Rusty in school. Great, great guy, and I'm still going to call him a kid, but that's cool. We're going to be talking to Adam Philpott, and right after we get through with you, because as you know, he's the new coach at Gloucester High School. Get any basketball? Get any words of wisdom for him?
He doesn't need any advice from me. I'm sure he'll do a great job.
All right. So, where are the Mariners right now? Give me an update on the standings.
Well, we're 5-3. We're a game out of first place, and there's a logjam at second. I think us, Hamilton, and Rowley are all tied at 5-3.
Okay.
And there's six teams this year, and everybody makes the playoffs. So we'll see how this week shakes out, but we'll probably be playing in a play-in game or a first-round game sometime next week.
All right, you know what? We'll catch up with you during the playoffs when I get this thing ironed out. We got some new software here, and obviously we're having some problems with it. But thanks for being patient, Coach. I appreciate it. And, hey, have fun. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks.
Thanks, Ryan. Take care. All right. That is Ryan Marks, who is the coach of the ITL team, the Manchester Mariners, 5-3, as you heard him say. And I don't know if Tim is there or not. I'm going to say he's not. So let me see if I can press this button. And... what? Okay, so I got to call him back. Oh, my goodness. All right, so let's try this. This is fun. I wonder if we still have any listeners left. Jeepers.
No, all of a sudden it went blank.
Yeah, I know.
I just left it where it was.
This is crazy. All right, we're back. I'm going to take a break here, Coach. I don't know how this is going to work either because it's tough monitoring it. But then we'll check in with Adam Philpott, who plays for the Manchester Mariners, as you heard Coach Marks just mention. So we'll take a break. We'll come by right back. You're listening to MSO News Sports on this is North Shore Sports Night.
You'll love the Bradford Tavern in Rowley as they feature a menu to please everyone. Start your meal with your choice from a dozen delicious appetizers. There are also soups and fresh salads. Dinner selections include burgers, sirloin tips, chicken parmesan, chicken piccata, and then there's seafood, clams, haddock, salmon, lobsters, and fish tacos. Plus a wide selection of sandwiches and wraps. Let the Bradford Tavern host your events or functions set in unique spaces. Open 6 days a week, Tuesday through Sunday. The Bradford Tavern, Route 133 Rowley and Bradford Tavern.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Professional builders and remodelers choose Anderson Windows more than any other brand in the United States. They do so because Anderson Windows and patio doors offer beautiful natural wood interiors, low-maintenance exteriors, and outstanding energy efficiency. See the complete line of Anderson Windows at any of our three locations in Beverly, North Reading, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber.
Let me get this mic on here. We're playing with some new software, so we're having a mess. Let me turn off this little spot here. I'm going to bring in Tim Kearns, and oh, hold on. I got to shut this down. Thank you. Here we go. All right, let me bring Coach Kearns on. All right, Coach, I've got Adam on the line here, so I think we're good to go. Tim, you there?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Coach, first of all, congratulations on your becoming the brand new head coach at Gloucester High School. Got to feel good, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of a little sense of relief when I got the call from A.D. Lafada. And now just excited and ready. Fingers crossed we have a season here moving forward. But ready to hit the ground running for sure.
Well, we just talked with Ryan Marks over there at the Manchester Mariners. You're playing some summer ball. Probably great to be outside, I mean, after this spring. What are you doing professionally now, Adam? I haven't talked with you since we did a football game a while back.
Yep. For the past about 3 years now, I've been down at Gorin's locally, which is nice. Keep the commute down.
Mm-hmm.
I've been working in the finance department over there, and it's been great.
Fantastic. Well, I'm going to let Coach Kearns step in here, too, but I want to remind people that Adam, of course, was the Male Athlete of the Year at Gloucester High School in 2011, playing three sports, basketball, football, baseball. He's worked with us at MSO and done an incredible job. Third leading scorer all time, boys basketball, matching up against the Prats. I saw a couple of generations of Prats at Good Harbor Beach this past week. It gave me a flashback. But Coach, going into this season, I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are. Have you were assistant coach for a while, is that correct?
Yeah, for five years.
Okay, and was that with was that with Coach Cahill?
So I spent my first year or two with Coach Cahill when I got out of college, and then Chris took over the reins.
Oh, that's right. Yep.
Been a part of the program ever since.
Yep. All right. Well, you know, you've had some coaches, some terrific coaches, and I know Chris very well. I know Bill very well. I know them as people. I don't know them as coaches because I don't know that much about basketball. But Adam, where you played, you know, at Bates and so on, are there coaches that you sort of take stuff from and that you're going to incorporate in what you use?
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, it kind of even goes back to the beginning. I've just been so fortunate to be surrounded by so many people in all sports, really. And I've tried to kind of take into my philosophy, kind of not just sports-specific, but coaching young athletes in general. So, you know, you run down the list. My dad coached me in every sport growing up. I look at a guy like Paul Ingram, who had a huge influence on me, not just as a player, but a person. Then, like you guys said, Coach Cahill and Coach Silvera, and then when I got off to college with Coach John Furbus, we were fortunate to have some success there as well. So there's just so many different kind of philosophies I've been able to pick off from, and also from so many different sports. So hopefully I can apply that and pass that on to the kids. And the main goal, you know, you'd love to win as many games as you can. That's always nice. But the main goal for me is to try to teach these kids some lessons and provide some memories that they'll hold on to as they move out of high school and hopefully into some careers, whether they go off to college or, you know, get into the workforce, whatever that may be.
Tim?
Adam, congratulations on the appointment.
Thank you very much.
Growing up in Gloucester, having as much success as you've had across the entire spectrum of sports, what does it mean to you to get this head coaching job?
It meant a lot. You know, when I got it, it kind of took me a minute to kind of just sit and take a breath and really take it all in. When I was moving on from college, I knew I wanted to come back home to Gloucester and kind of set my roots here. Just with how many people have, you know, been in my corner from day one growing up playing sports. And I was fortunate to have, you know, so many great memories and some successful
sports teams in high school. And in the moment, I didn't really realize it. You know, when you're that age in high school, you know, winning is first and foremost in your head. But when I had moved on, I realized how fortunate I was to come from a close-knit kind of blue-collar community like Gloucester is, and surrounded by so many great people. So I was fortunate enough to come back to Gloucester after college and jumped on the coaching staff. And it's just kind of just been such a great experience. And even coaching, my kind of image of it has morphed so much. In the beginning, I was using it as a way to just stay close to the game of basketball, and it quickly turned into the realization that I can have so much more of an impact just outside of basketball for these athletes. And there's nothing more rewarding than seeing a kid come back after he's moved on from the program and just see them doing so many great things in their life outside of sports.
Coach,
when I got that call, I was just beyond grateful.
Well, you know, I get a chance to talk to a member of the doctor's office the other day, and she was thrilled. And she goes, "But he's so young." And I'm thinking, man, he's not that young anymore.
I don't feel young, I'll tell you that.
You're always going to be so young to mom, believe me. And to we old timers here, to us old timers, it's just unbelievable. Now, Adam, you know, the thing I'm so impressed with when you work with us is your knowledge of sports, your ability to communicate that to a radio audience. And looking at Gloucester High School, in my opinion, over the years, basketball has sort of taken a back seat to the other major sports at Gloucester High School. However, that said, I don't know, maybe in the last decade or so, it's really kind of risen toward the top. So how do you look at that? And, you know, with hockey sometimes taking over, football being the big thing, but basketball, Gloucester High School, that gym, how do you view this whole thing? What's your philosophy? What do you want to bring to the table here?
Yeah, well, I think it certainly comes in phases, but like you said, Rick, especially when I was playing in high school, basketball definitely kind of took a backseat to hockey and football. But, you know, the past kind of 5 or 6 years there, we're really starting to gain some momentum. I think we've been in the tournament the last 3 out of the 4 years, and we're certainly starting to get some respect around the conference that, you know, when you play the Gloucester freshman, you're going to be in for a basketball game. And we've kind of kept that mentality. That's kind of what Gloucester's been known to before, it's just tough, hard-nosed kids who are going to fight to the end. You know, we might not have the most talent in any of the sports, but when it comes down to it, always going to give you a game, and I think we're starting to get that respect in the basketball world, and hopefully we're just able to build off what, you know, Coach Kale and Chris LaVar have really put a lot of time into building, and I'm going to do my best to step in there and kind of keep the train rolling.
All right, what's your first move now as we get ready for whatever's coming our way this fall?
Yeah, well, we're certainly in some unprecedented times with all this going on. Hopefully in the next week or so, I'll connect with A.D. Lafada, kind of get a game plan going down, and hopefully be able to host a meeting, whether that's virtual or, you know, socially distanced in person or whatever, just to try to get the message out. You know, I want to get as many kids playing basketball as possible. We're very fortunate. We have a brand new field house coming in, which is long overdue, so that will be a treat being built as we speak. So we're really looking forward to that. And, you know, fingers crossed we can have a season. And I know kind of the kids' summer programs have kind of been delayed. We couldn't have a summer league or whatnot. But that's every school, you know, so we're all kind of in the same playing field here. And as soon as we're able to, you know, hit the ground running, we'll get right on that.
So can you still help us out in football if we need you?
Absolutely, I love it.
Okay, that's good.
I always enjoy getting into the booth for some fall football, absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, I know that we're very excited for you, Coach. Everybody I talk to is excited for you. And we wish you nothing but the best. And thanks for taking the time. We'll check in with you later.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Coach. Take care.
Thanks, Adam. Bye-bye.
That is Adam Philpott, who is the new Gloucester High School boys basketball coach. And, Tim, did you notice how the first thing he talked about was not so much the X's and O's, but character in working with kids?
Well, you know, a lot of that comes from his own family upbringing and early coaching from his dad that, you know, it's not all about between the lines, but it's what goes on outside of the line that you're judged by. You leave more of an impression by what you do out in the community than what you do playing any particular game.
Well, I'm very excited for Adam, and if we have a football season, I know that he's going to be a real pleasure to work with up in the press box. All right, Coach, we're not going to take a break because I don't know
if you're afraid of losing connection.
Yeah, if my software can handle it or I can handle it. So what we'll do is I have to put you on hold so that I can call Gary, and those who are listening are just going to have to stay patient. This is MSO No Sports. It's North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore along with Tim Kearns. Our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and we're phasing out the old computers because they're just not helping us out here. Trying to get into the new ones with the new software, and I'm not quite ready for primetime. So hold on. We'll be right back with Tim, and I'm going to bring in Gary here in just a second, hopefully, as we see if we can connect with him. Gary Larrabee, of course, golf writer, sports historian, and I think he's got some a lot of great information, as he always does.
Hi-ho.
Hey, Gary, we're live. Welcome back. Let me bring in Tim here by pressing that button. And how are you?
Wonderful. How are you?
Okay.
Hi, Gary.
Hi, Timmy, dear.
Oh, God, it's too hot. Anyway, Gary, I was just talking manager of the Manchester Mariners intertown baseball league team about the heat, and Tim about the heat playing baseball. But I don't know what the heat, how it affects golf, but you've got some pretty good stories locally here to tell us.
Yes, I do. We should talk first of all about late breaking news, which happened just today. And one of the fellows I want to talk about because of his smashing victory last week had a very good round today as well. He finished tied for third. That's Kirk Hannafeldt from Salem Country Club. Shot 70 at Cohasset down on the South Shore, which was a resumption of his fine play from last week, guys, when he won the New England PGA Seniors Championship at the Blackstone National out in Sutton by seven shots. Shot 12 under 132. Not bad for a guy, 64 years old. We talked about him briefly on Monday night. But he's right there back on the beam at the age of 64, and another good round today, and we're going to look forward to seeing how he plays at the New England PGA Championship coming up at Myopia and Tedesco starting 2 weeks from today.
Tim, you there?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that's in marked contrast at Kurt's age, and the success that he's had over the last couple of weeks, and Chris Francoeur, who won the Wimette last weekend and then set a course record down in Plymouth just today.
Yes, I mean, we've got some hot players around here these days. One's a professional, one's an amateur. You know, Chris Francoeur has established himself as a top-notch amateur in the region, and he certainly proved it again last week at the Wimette. And unfortunately, there's not too much else to play for since he cannot play in the U.S. Amateur, but I think he's playing in the North Shore Amateur, which begins tomorrow, 2 days at the Far Corner. So, yes, big time, big week last week for Chris Francoeur. We should also make note that Frank Vanno on the 65 and over division after we met. Frank plays out of both Marlboro and where he grew up and where he lived for many years, but now he's also up here in the North Shore living in Boxer with his family. And he certainly also represents Ferncroft. So nice going, Frank. Nice going, Chris. And nice going, Kirk Hannafeldt.
Gary, jumping over to the pro tour as I change screens here. Justin Thomas won in Memphis and took back the number one spot for the first time in 2 years.
Yes, I mean, he's clearly the top player in the world right now. He's only got his fourth win of the year. And that's with 4 months of no activity whatsoever. He has to be clearly considered the player to beat this week at the PGA Championship out in San Francisco at Harding Park, which is now part of the network of TPC golf courses. But, of course, you'll have the usual suspects out there. Brooks Koepka finished tied for second yesterday, and Also in the top 20, we have, you know, Webb Simpson and Dustin Johnson. It should be just a fantastic week for the first major of the year. But right now, they say it's hard to win 2 weeks in a row, but when you're playing at the level that Justin Thomas is playing at right now, he has to clearly be the play to beat this week out there in the West Coast.
Has Koepka played himself back into playing shape? I mean, you know, from the recent results, he appears to be back on the mark.
He does. He did slip a couple of holes down the stretch yesterday. He was chasing Thomas. They were tied, in fact, I think, with 4 or 5 holes to go, and Koepka made a couple of uncharacteristic bogeys. But Thomas was steady hitting it because poor Justin only won $1.8 million for winning yesterday. I'm not sure what the first place purse is this week at the PGA, but if you play good, the rich get richer on the PGA Tour, unlike the other tours. And I mean, believe it or not, Tim, they even had the LPGA Tour back in action at the famous Inverness Club in Toledo.
Yep.
And Danielle Kang won the event. But more noteworthy was the fact that our own Greater Boston's Megan Kang, no relation to Danielle, they spelled their last name a little bit different. She finished tied for 11, which is a very good finish for her. And we're hoping for some bigger things for Megan as the LPGA Tour filled with no names and names we have no interest in. Just filled with it. And I don't know how the LPGA Tour, quite frankly, is going to survive, but we'll see how it evolves. We also saw Rob Oppenheim finish in the middle of the pack at the secondary level PGA Tour event this weekend. Rob hasn't played great, but at least he made the cut at the PGA Barracuda out in Truckee, California. I don't believe Rob is playing at the PGA Championship this week. Brett Quigley from Rhode Island, he's a New England boy, so we're very happy for him. He won the Champions Tour event that was held. Where was that thing held? Oh, out in Michigan. In fact, Brett did not win. Brett blew it the last round. Sorry, Rick. Furyk won his first Champions Tour event.
Excellent.
We got to kick him back on the regular tour. He's too
busy
playing the Champions Tour, even though he qualifies at the age of 51.
Gary, so I
saw that that headline, and I'm thinking, you know, he's been around so long. I'd have thought he'd been playing on that before, but at only 51. And the one thing I do like when they do show the old man's league, just how enjoyable it is to see those guys playing once again at a really high level that they always played at. But they played in such a much more relaxed fashion. Now they're out there, they're having fun, they're making some money, they're out there with their old buddies. It's like a midday week, let's go golfing, guys.
Well, they may look relaxed to you, but believe me, they're ready to slit their opponent's throat if they have the chance out there. And nothing breeds hunger and contempt and jealousy and all the bad attributes of golfers than the big bucks.
Yeah.
And if you notice yesterday, Furyk won $300,000 for winning, which ain't too shabby, but believe me, he would push the guys who finished second, Retief Goosen and Brett Quigley, off a cliff if he could to guarantee he would win the tournament.
All right, Gary, you know, it sounds like you got to take care of that allergy here, but I want to know what's coming up in the Salem News this week.
Salem News this week, let's see. We're going to be talking about the Women's State Amateur, which is next week, Rick, at Essex County Club, and we're going to be looking back on past women's amateurs at Essex, and most recently, 1991, when Anne-Marie Tobin won the second of her record 7 in Women's State Amateurs, and she'll be talking about Essex and how the players who will be there will be trying to win that coveted tournament, which, of course, has also been won by Margaret Curtis back in the dark ages and Joanne Goodwin.
Okay, well, again, more incredible news coming from Gary Larrabee about the world of golf. And, Gary, I do appreciate it. Stay cool, and let me see here. I don't think there's anything preventing us from getting together next week, I hope.
I look forward to it.
Thank you, Gary. Appreciate it.
Thank you, man. Take care.
All right, talk to you later. That is Gary Larrabee, who is a sports historian and golf writer here on the North Shore. And, of course, his columns come out every Friday in the Salem News. And then I believe they're published Saturday in the Gloucester Times. Sometimes they hold them over till Monday. But once a week we get some tremendous sports writing from Gary. And we're lucky to have that kind of resource here. All right, Tim, we're going to try to catch up to Mike Grenier. So once again, I'll be back.
Hey, Rick, how are you?
Hey, Mike, doing well. We're live here, as you may have heard, having some trouble with the software, so I'm doing this online, live. Let me bring Tim back, and we have Coach back with us. So Mike, how are you doing with this, between the weather and the virus and everything else that's going on? How are you and the family?
I guess the way we sum it up, Rick, is we try to avoid... I'm naturally gregarious, but however, we're trying to avoid people as much as possible.
There you go. Well, you know what? For some of us in this family, we're not, and we like to avoid people, so this gives us an excuse.
Yeah, exactly. But you can't, you know, in all seriousness, we can't be too careful. I mean, Nick Giannino in the Salem News today had a great story about Pat Connaughton out of St. John's Prep with the Milwaukee Bucks. He tested positive for COVID, and he's 27 years old and healthy. And he had a couple of rough days. He's back with the team right now, but he still hasn't been cleared to play.
Well, I know, Tim, you've been championing this the protective health side of this thing for a long time, and at least here in Massachusetts, we seem to be in pretty good shape. And I hope that trickles down to the world of sports, Tim.
Well, you know, the governor's been pinned for some of the things that he suggested that we do, but the numbers, you know, tell the story. When people were following the dictates, you know, the numbers went down. We actually went down to one day where there were zero new cases, but everybody gets excited and then runs outside and celebrates. And what we've seen an uptick in the number of cases in the state. And, you know, the alarm has to go back out again. And it has to occur at some time when everybody takes this as seriously as they should. And when that happens, that's when you're going to see major progress made against it. That and when a vaccine or an antidote comes out that's available to everybody, you know. But until then, Governor New Jersey called the people knuckleheads, went out and just violated all the norms that you should be following right now, and they've seen 175% spike in the number of new cases. So if you don't follow the rules, you know, it's going to burn you.
Mike, Major League Baseball has had a problem again today with the St. Louis Cardinals, and it just doesn't look good. Football, a lot of players are opting out, which I think is understandable. You've been watching the NBA and in particular the Celtics, and give us your impressions of what it's like in the bubble.
I think that's probably been the most protective atmosphere of any of the major sports so far, along with hockey, I believe. But obviously the NBA bubble has worked because they're playing in the same few arenas. They can't leave the bubble without having to be quarantined, you know, for breaking the rule of leaving the bubble. You know, for the most part, obviously there are no fans. It's been a more controlled environment. And I think that makes all the difference in the world compared to baseball teams, right, Rick and Tim, where we see teams flying from city to city and going to hotels and mixing with the general public and, of course, any personal foolishness they might engage in, like going to a bar or a restaurant where there's no protective, no mask being, you know, and no social distancing. So baseball is much more vulnerable right now than basketball. Basketball has done a great job so far, but again, we're only a week into it. So it's thrilling, though, to see the Celtics play a couple of games, and the games have been competitive. That I've enjoyed seeing live basketball again. So I'm hoping this protective bubble keeps on happening, because it's shaping up to be a good end of the regular season and a lot of good playoff games. So we'll see what happens.
We're talking with Mike Grenier, sports writer emeritus for the Salem News, and been around for a while and covered so many different sports, but in particular basketball, with his eye on the NBA and the Celtics. Mike, I did not see either of the first two games for the Celtics.
That's shame on you.
I know. I read about them, and what caught my eye in the game against Milwaukee, besides the Marcus Smart Instagram post, was 2-for-18 for Jason Tatum. And I'm thinking, you know what? If he makes 6-for-18, they win this game going away. So I didn't feel too bad about that one. And lo and behold, it looks like he bounced back like a true professional in the most recent game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he scored 34 against the Portland Trail Blazers yesterday. He looked like a much better player, certainly like the player that we saw back in February when he was averaging almost 30 points a game and all that. And, of course, Jaylen Brown has had two very solid games, including 30 points yesterday, and I think 16 or 18 of those came in the fourth quarter when the game was on the line. The Celtics have played well so far, even though they did blow the bulk of they actually blew a 24-point lead yesterday before regaining their composure and their mojo in the final couple of minutes to win the game. So, you know, with the Celtics, it still looks promising. I still believe the weakness of that team, the Achilles heel, is the bench. Brad Stevens shortened his bench yesterday. He really only played Marcus Smart and Enes Kanter a little bit. Beyond that, he didn't play people like Carson Edwards or Robert Williams and the guys that were looking so promising when they were just doing individual workouts. So I think we're going to see more of that. I think Brad Stevenson's got to parcel out the minutes to the guys who can really be effective, and he has to be very careful about Kemba Walker. So far, Walker says he feels good, his knee feels better, and however, Brad Stevens is monitoring that by playing him 20 minutes or 19 minutes, I believe, in game one and 22 minutes yesterday against Portland. So I think there's going to be some so-called pain management or load management when it comes to Kemba Walker, who obviously is a very big part of this team.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. I guess it was Jaylen Brown's Instagram thing, but whatever it was funny with the referee and and Giannis.
No, you're right about no. You're right, it was Marcus.
Oh, it was okay.
Yeah, he got fined $15,000, and you know what? When I look at that game, he had a point, because the play in question, it clearly looked to at least us novices, who are not officials, it looked like Giannis committed his sixth foul and that Marcus Smart had drawn that sixth foul. However, upon further review, it was, you know, it was found that Marcus Smart supposedly committed the foul, and, you know, Giannis got to stay in the game, and it cost the Celtics the game. So Marcus Smart, he probably doesn't mind paying the $15,000 because he made a heck of a point.
Oh, that was funny as hell, too, watching that thing. I'm going to ask you one more question before I turn it over to Tim here. You mentioned shortening the bench, and I think that is quite an observation that I don't think I was aware of Coach Stevens doing last year when Kyrie was getting so many minutes and all these other guys, he was getting them, but everybody else was kind of filtering in and out. And even in this year, you know, we had 8, 9, 10 players every game. So how do you see that, Mike? Is that a change in strategy? Is it? And we know, I think, in years past, Celtics can play with 7 or 8 guys and win.
Right. And I think it's going to have to be 7 or 8 guys. And I think that right now, with only 6 games remaining before the playoffs start, the Miami Heat were creeping right up on the Celtics in the standings. And the Celtics still hold the number 3 position, but the Miami Heat, after the Celtics lost to Milwaukee, we're only a game and a half behind the Celtics for that number 3 spot. Well, fortunately for the Celtics today, the Miami Heat lost to Toronto this afternoon. So that gives the Celtics a little more wiggle room in that number 3 spot. I really think Brad Stevens is trying to lock up that number 3 spot and avoid playing, let's say, Philadelphia, Toronto, and Milwaukee in that order in the upcoming playoffs. So I think he's looking for perhaps a shot at playing the Indiana Pacers or something instead of Philly in the first round. So we'll see how that goes. But I think The only way you can do that is by guaranteeing that only the best players play in these important six games. These are not just an eight-game tune-up for the playoffs. This is these eight games that to actually lock up the best position possible for the playoffs and avoiding a more difficult first-round matchup. So I think that's why he's shortening the bench. And we'll see how it does. They have to play Miami head-to-head tomorrow night, and then they have, I guess you'd call it a breather, the very next night they play the Brooklyn Nets, who are on the, you know, sort of like the number eight spot right now. And that looks like a very winnable game, obviously. But the Miami Heat game tomorrow is actually a crucial game in terms of locking up that number three spot.
Coach, you there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm listening to Mike Wax politically here. Mike, when I heard that they blew the 20-point lead yesterday, my first thought was, I thought it's so reminiscent of this team over the past year and a half. Is that they race out to these really big leads, and then they just can't hold down. They just can't keep the pedal to the metal, and they allow these other teams to crawl back in the games, but take them over.
I know. It's a real problem. Sometimes it's characteristic of certain teams. As you know, they have a penchant for doing that, and this Celtics team has a penchant, unfortunately, for blowing big leads and sometimes recapturing it at the end of the game like they did yesterday. You had to sweat out that game yesterday. Despite leading by 24 at one point early in the game. But then again, you're talking like Damian Lillard. We've seen he's capable of scoring 50 or 60 points in a game, and he had 16 assists to go with his 30 points yesterday. So, I mean, they're a dangerous outside shooting team, and they're desperate to make the playoffs in the Western Conference, so they were playing like it was a playoff game. So I think these games, in many ways, are mini playoff games because some teams are trying to actually, you know, finish with a good enough record to make the playoffs. In the Celtics' case, they want to finish third, and get the best seeding possible with only six games to go. You know.
Well, you know, and now is the time the Celtics should adopt some of that similar attitude that you got to get into playoff mode, even though you're only playing the short eight game schedule. These games do mean something, and with the limited time you've had to play, you're really going to fast track not only your intensity, but your skill level, getting yourself back into that tough game condition, that playoff mentality, because it could be one and done real quick in these playoffs if you're not as much mentally prepared as you are physically prepared.
That's right, Tim, and I agree 100% what you're saying, and I think the Celtics, that's why those practices leading into the bubble games were so important. You want to actually go into game one after having like basically 4 months off. These players, I kind of like feel like they were compelled to be in the best shape possible because you have to put your pedal to the metal in the very first game that you're back that you are in the bubble, because like you said, you could easily lose that number three seed, or if you're a number seven seed, you could fall out of the playoff run. So yeah, there's a lot of pressure on the teams that are, you know, sort of like in the bubble to make the on the bubble to make the playoffs. So the Celtics right now, at least they're 1-1. They looked much better yesterday against Portland overall, that is, despite blowing the lead. And they've got a couple of important games. Actually, they had three games this week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday. So they have to be in tip-top physical and mental condition to try to grind it out and be in position mentally and physically to open the playoffs in a couple of weeks. It comes very quickly.
Mike, there's been so many features written in sports the last 3 months that because there were no live sports. And one of the things that I saw consistent on NBC Sports Boston or NBC's, NBC Sports Boston, were that a lot of people were picking both the Bruins to win the Stanley Cup and the Celtics to win the NBA. Is that reasonable for the Celtics? Do they have a shot at it, do you think?
Well, I say I'm looking at this as a glass half empty because I don't think they have the bench in the long run to compete. The Milwaukee Bucks have, I think, by far the best bench in the NBA. So I kind of see them as a front runner, not only in the Eastern Conference, but perhaps even as a favorite over the Lakers in the West. I think the Celtics would need to get lucky, play an amazing six or seven game series against, let's say, Toronto or whatever, to get themselves into the Eastern Conference Finals. And then that bench, which has not been very good for the Celtics, would have to play above and beyond what they've been doing to compete against the Milwaukee Bucks. I mean, I just think the Bucks have the talent level. And the thing that worries me about the Celtics, too, is they really don't have the big people to combat a Giannis. And to, you know, they just don't have. Daniel Tice is an undersized center. Enes Kanter is a bit defensive of a defensive liability. And Taco Fall certainly is not ready for the NBA. And Robert Williams, despite the athletic promise that he shows, when he gets to the real game situation, often is out of position. And he's just, I don't think he's ready yet to make a major contribution in the playoffs.
Jim, final word for Mike.
Well, you know, go ahead,
Mike,
Jim.
What's your take on Kendrick Perkins as an analyst?
Well, I mean, he gets into it with Paul Pierce sometimes, doesn't he? I mean, it's pretty funny, you know. But you know what? I would be remiss, Tim, and if I didn't mention that North Shore, another North Shore connection, Tom Thibodeau.
Yes,
yes.
Former
Salem State player, and he was a coach there when he was like 22 years old.
Yep.
Has now been hired by the New York Knicks with a 5-year contract to try to turn that sorry franchise around. And if anybody can make a major improvement and overhaul that team, it would be Tom Thibodeau. I know him very well. I've known him for like 30 years, more than that, actually 35 years since he was playing. And he, of course, he did an amazing job with the Chicago Bulls. He was the coach of the year. They won 62 games. You know, he has a very good coaching record overall in the NBA, loads of experience. So I think the Knicks made finally a good choice for a head coach in Tom Thibodeau. I'll be watching him very closely when the Knicks play for real.
What do you think his strong point is, Mike? What's his strongest asset?
Defensively, to this day, Rick and Tim, I remember covering the Celtics around when they won it all in 2008, he was indispensable to Doc Rivers as the defensive architect of that team. And statistically, over the years, whether he was with Houston or the Knicks or the Celtics, those teams finished in the top 10 or even in the top 5 defensively in the entire NBA in terms of points allowed or shooting percentage, all that kind of stuff. So he is a defensive specialist, a mastermind, and that's what he will bring to the Knicks. He's a no-nonsense guy. He grinds it out defensively, and that's his forte. He's known for his defense, and he's taken that, carried that reputation literally for 30 years, and that's how he got his job as a head coach and was a head coach with the Bulls starting in 2010. So hopefully he brings that strength to the New York Knicks. Not that we like the New York Knicks. I've always hated the New York Knicks.
Right, right.
But they've had some bad basketball teams literally there for 3 or 4 decades, and he can start putting the pieces together.
Wait a minute. Did Bill Bradley play for the Knicks?
Bill Bradley played for the Knicks, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well,
and I've talked to Bill Bradley extensively over the years. Obviously, he was a guy from Princeton. He was a Rhodes Scholar.
Yep.
Just a tremendous competitor, great player, very a cerebral player, very intelligent player.
All right, because that's when I sort of kept my eye on the Knicks. Okay, so he did play for the Knicks. All right.
Oh, yeah, and they won those couple of titles back in the early 70s
yeah.
with Paul Frazier, Earl the Pearl Monroe.
Oh, yeah.
Dave DeBuscher, Jerry Lucas.
Dave DeBuscher. I was going to bring that name up, but I thought, no, wait a minute. Maybe I got the wrong team. Okay, the old mind ain't what it used to be. Hey, Mike, thanks so much. Great stuff. We'll catch up with you in a couple weeks.
Okay, yes, and Tim, it's great to hear your voice as well, and you guys take it easy until next time.
Excellent.
Take care, buddy.
Okay, Mike.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you.
Thank
yep.
you. That's Mike Grenier, who is Sports Emeritus, Sports Writer Emeritus. He does feature articles for the Salem News, and, God, we're lucky to have it's funny, Tim, Dave DeBuscher came to mind, but then I kept thinking of Johnny Most yelling some crazy name about a Detroit Piston, and it just got all messed up with me.
Yeah. Well, when he mentioned Bradley, my first thought, and he mentioned cerebral ball player, was Jerry Lucas of Cincinnati.
Oh, yeah.
And,
well, I remember.
You know, a little bit being a little bit more physical, kind of in the Dave DeBuscher mold, but just an incredibly smart basketball player.
And I remember in 1960, I think it was, when I was a little kid listening, I was in Germany, and I listened to the NCAA finals. It was Ohio State versus Cincinnati, I think, or at least one of those games. Oscar Robertson was on one team, and John Havlicek was it Havlicek?
On the Ohio State Buckeyes.
Yeah, yeah. And
Thompson Buckeye from yeah. Ohio State.
Yeah, that okay, so I was right, yeah. And I was like, man, and that was some, and they both became superstars in the NBA. Oh, man. Coach, any final thoughts here? I got to tell you, and I hate to admit it, I'm not even really interested in watching the Red Sox.
No, neither am I.
That's weird, isn't it?
You turn them on and they're losing. It's like, come on, guys. Can you get a lead? I was surprised they had a lead yet last night. And then, you know, the Yankees jump ahead and they jump back ahead. And it's like, okay, let's give this a rest. I can't go through this. But who the hell is pitching for these guys?
Well, obviously, that's their hugest weakness. But they've got three or four position players, Tim. Like, who are they and where do they come from? I don't know. But the pitching staff, yeah, it's just it doesn't bode well. The Bruins, the thing that made me nervous about the Bruins, I think I read, I don't know if it was in the Associated Press or one of those stories, mentioned that the Bruins looked really old against the Flyers the other night.
I haven't even spent 2 minutes watching the Bruins not that far. I don't know, maybe I'm just getting old, but you know, with all this, all the illness that is going around, and you know, all the gravity and people not paying attention to it, I just can't get into what everybody's all the beacons are like. We have to have sports; it's something we need to do. You know, when the public health and the health of even the players comes into question, then it really can't be that important to me.
Gotcha. Understood. Well, Tim, we'll do it again next week. Thank you for your pearls of wisdom and your expertise, and stay well, my man.
I will do that, Rick. We'll talk to you.
Thank you, Coach. Talk to you later.
All right, bud.
All right, bye-bye. That is Tim Kearns, who's our MSO analyst on all sports, all things sports, and our goodwill ambassador. Sorry about the technical glitches 2 weeks in a row here. We'll get it fixed. We'll figure it out. But thank you for joining us, and thanks to our special guest this evening, New Gloucester High School boys basketball coach Adam Philpott, a former Gloucester baseball player Ryan Marks, who is the coach of the Manchester Mariners in the ITL, of course, to Mike Renier of the Salem News, and of course, to Gary Larrabee, sports historian and golf writer, and thank you for being with us. Tell your friends about us. You can still email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. So that's it. We'll be back next Monday night. Appreciate your being with us. This is MSO News Sports. This has been North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore. For Bill Newell, Bill Proposky, and Tim Kearns, stay safe.